USAID buildings remain closed today. So the acting head of the agency, Secretary of State Marco Rubio, says a review is being done of USAID. Rubio says this is not about getting rid of foreign aid. He argues USAID has veered off course from its original mission of advancing American interests abroad. There are also reports that USAID has fallen short of its goals for some projects in years past. Republicans have pointed out USAID has spent $20 million for a Sesame Street workshop in Iraq. It's doled out $1.5 million to advance DEI in Serbia's workplaces and business communities. It's given $6 million to fund tourism in Egypt, all initiatives that Republicans say are just plain wasteful.
I have been on USAID's case for years now, going back several years where I was trying to investigate the expenditures for humanitarian aid, primarily when it came to the war in Ukraine. And what my team and I encountered was absolute obstruction and lies coming out of USAID.
But supporters say USAID has helped counter Russian and Chinese influence around the world. They also say the 90-day freeze the president has implemented on foreign aid not only threatens lives, but livelihoods too. Causal Design, a Colorado-based contractor, says it's losing 70% of its revenue from the USAID stop work order. Its CEO says they're considering layoffs within the end of the month if the situation doesn't change. Democrats say a reorganization of USAID can't be legally done without congressional approval, setting up perhaps another legal battle for the Trump administration in the coming days and the coming weeks, John.
Yeah, USAID is helping a lot of people. They're helping Al-Qaeda-affiliated fighters with meals, you know, meals on wheels. They also spent hundreds of millions of dollars to fund irrigation canals, farming equipment, and, ready, even fertilizer used to support the unprecedented poppy cultivation and heroin production in Afghanistan. So that helps the Taliban. They're very helpful. USAID is very helpful. And I want to repeat something I think I said in my first conversation with Phil Kirpin. Samantha Power, who's the head of USAID, has been there for, I think, 3 years. So she's gone now. But she earns a salary of $180,000. And somehow, I don't understand it, but her net worth has moved from $6.7 million 3 years ago to $30 million. Wouldn't it be interesting to talk to Samantha Power about that and see how many people she helped along the way while she was making her $30 million? I mean, it's pretty amazing. It's and then there's one more I just found this morning. $2.1 billion was paid to Gaza as humanitarian aid since October the 7th. Yes, USAID, while Biden was halting arms from Israel, was funding Hamas. And so there you go. That's what USAID was doing. We're talking about government waste and spending. And today is our second conversation with Phil Kirpin. And we're going to get actually into Social Security and Medicare, the Department of Education, all kinds of things, just projecting. And also the buyout for federal workers. That's a whole other interesting story. And so we'll have that discussion with Phil in just a second. But first, as long as the abortion pill is legally mailed and taken in all 50 states, no state can be abortion-free. Abortion pills carry distinct risks to mothers and death to babies, and now accounts for over 60% of all abortions. Preborn's network of clinics shine a light into this darkness by offering free services to women considering the future of their baby, including the abortion reversal pill. This powerful remedy can help reverse the curse of this toxic medication. Preborn reaches into the heart of babies and mothers and with God's love and compassion. And to date, they have rescued over 300,000 babies. Your tax-deductible monthly support of any amount is crucial in the fight for life. All proceeds go toward life, and together we can reverse this horrible curse. Saving babies isn't just about one life. It's about saving the heartbeat of the entire nation. To donate, please go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Well, this is Sandy Rios 24/7. You can listen to us on any podcast platform. You can email us. And by the way, we're going to be doing an email show pretty soon here at sandy@afr.net. Love hearing what you have to say. And I share as many of your email as I can on the air. You can also call us at 662-821-2040. That's 662-821-2040. You can find us on social media platforms, and you can also go to sandyrios.com. listen to the show, and find out more about what we're doing. Well, Phil Kirpin, my guest, this is part two with him, is the president of American Commitment. And Phil has, the last time I talked to Phil actually was with the COVID numbers. He was tracking that. He's just got a great mind for numbers. And so I thought he would be a perfect person to talk about what's happening in Washington, D.C., where he lives and has been for many, many years. And so you're in for, you know, some great information on today's edition, the second part with Phil Kirpin on Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness. That we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
But, all right, so I know that you're really interested in the Department of Education. I think in the past we've probably talked about what's going on in education. What do you expect they'll see when they get into that?
Well, the vast majority of that department, from a dollar standpoint, is student lending, which was nationalized. And by the way, there's something hilarious to me, or ironic, I don't know, about Maxine Waters talking about how CFPB is going to protect you from all the evil predatory student lenders, when literally the only student lender in this country since 2010 is the U.S. Department of Education, because they nationalize student lending. And so if there's a predatory practice going on in student lending, it's your own Department of Education that's doing it. It's your own federal government that's doing it. They nationalized all the student lending. So most of what they do from a dollar standpoint is, you know, they've given out, you know, $1.6 trillion of student loans. And, of course, Democrats are trying to do everything possible to have them not be repaid, to have taxpayers just absorb the losses on that. So I would love to see student lending privatized and all of those loans sold off, auctioned off, so we can get, you know, get back however many cents on the dollar we can, and not have the risk of them all just being discharged in the future. So from a dollar standpoint, that's most of what the agency is. But then from an operational standpoint, what are the, you know, what are the 70,000 or whatever the number is employees doing every day? Well, I mean, they're taking money that comes in from taxpayers all over the country. They're burning off a huge portion of it to pay their own salaries and administrative waste and so forth. And then they're sending it back with all kinds of strings attached, and through federal control of all the special education dollars, through federal control of a lot of, you know, a lot of the other grant making and things like that. I mean, in terms of actual legitimate, to me, if you're going to have a federal Department of Education, okay, the only thing it should really do is produce statistics so that we know how the states are doing and we can compare them. We can compare school system quality and there can be transparency. So like the National Center for Education statistics and some of the testing stuff, that's about all I think is legitimate. I would like to see everything else eliminated, sent back to the states, keep the money there, have local control, don't pay for a vast bureaucracy that has strings attached to everything. And like everything else in the federal government, promotes left-wing ideology as well. So I think they're going to find an enormous amount of waste and abuse. It's an agency that probably should not exist. If you look at where we were as a country educationally prior to 1980, when Carter created the Department of Education, we actually had better outcomes before it existed than we have now, and we've spent, you know, over $1 trillion to get worse outcomes. So I think it's a very rich target for the team to go after. And, you know, I hope that Trump doesn't back down. And Democrats, of course, are screaming again, you know, if you want to eliminate the Department of Education, you hate kids and you don't want them to be educated. And I just, like, pull up the scores. I mean, we're not, it's whatever we're doing now is not working. I saw Tammy Baldwin, for instance, had, you know, all kinds of angry posts about how dare he do this and all this kind of thing. I mean, do you know what percentage of black fourth graders in the state of Wisconsin pass minimum proficiency in math on the most recent exam? 5%. 95% are below proficiency in her state. And it's like, well, whatever we're doing is not working. So changing it can only help.
You know, Phil, I don't think that'll be a hard sell. And I can't imagine President Trump backing away from that. I mean, people, you know, all communities understand that our education system is just, it's terrible. It's broken. Whether it's school choice or whether it's the outcomes that you mentioned, people know it's not safe in schools. I mean, I don't think that's a hard sell. And I think that he'll be able to, unless courts can stop him in ways we can't expect. The one last thing, area that I just I'll mention that I'm really excited about. I truly am, Phil, and that's Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, abuse and fraud and waste. That's about two, aren't they the largest elements of our national budget right now?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think interest on the debt might be number one right now, actually.
Okay.
But yeah, they're up there.
Yes.
And if you project going forward, they're by far the biggest increase because we've got an aging population. And it's a big challenge. I mean, if you look at the latest trust fund reports, I think Social Security Trust Fund exhausts in 2035. Medicare, I think, exhausts even sooner, 2032. And so either we're not going to pay the benefits in these programs that people paid into their whole life and are counting on and expecting, or much more likely, we are going to pay them, but they're going to have to print the money to pay for them. And we're going to have chronic inflation, a lot of other economic problems as a consequence. And it's very unfortunate that we haven't dealt with these sooner, because the longer you wait, the more difficult it is to address them. And I think that in particular, you know, we really have to address the out-of-control cost of health care, which, you know, Democrats have repeatedly told us they were doing, and every time they do, they make it worse, not better. And, you know, one of the things Trump did in his first term is he passed health care transparency, so the prices are supposed to be publicly posted for every health care system, for every procedure, so that you can shop around. Three-quarters of healthcare providers are out of compliance with that. They're just ignoring that requirement. So we've got to have enforcement of that so that we can have real competition. But we also need to fix the drivers of consolidation, the biggest one being that Medicare, insanely, will pay more for your doctor's visit if your doctor's part of a hospital system than if your doctor's in an independent physician practice. And so there's this huge incentive to, you know, have the hospitals gobble everyone up, and then you only have a couple of giant hospital systems in most towns, sometimes only one, and then there's no competition, no choice. And some bureaucrat is often dictating to the doctor who's now, you know, an employee on a salary, you know, what kind of care to provide. So I don't know. We could do a whole hour on health care, but those are a couple of the big points. And although I am very excited, I should say, about the healthcare team that's coming in with RFK and Marty McCary and Jay Bhattacharya in particular, who I know pretty well from, you know, the COVID wars. And I think that we're going to have a lot of brain power trying to address the problems in healthcare.
You know what? Once this starts, we'll have to talk again about that. I would like that. I would say one other thing. I want to be clear to my listeners. I'm not for cutting Social Security from people that need it, or Medicare, or any of that. It's just that my understanding, Phil, is that no one has been allowed to clean up anything in that. We know there's fraud. We know there's abuse. We know that there are people receiving payments that are not legal. They're not Americans.
Yeah.
We need to clean it up. We could save a ton of money doing that, and I'm actually looking forward to that. All right, last thing here, I'm going to pick your brain, because there's a drama unfolding on Capitol Hill. It unfolds, it seems, all too often these days. I'm not sure even, I think the news media gets tired of covering it. And it is very complex. And so you are really gifted at explaining the complex, Phil. So we've got, I'll just say what I know about this. We have to reconcile our budget. And so they're going through a process in the House. The House is the one that has to handle the purse strings. It falls to them to do that, and they've been delaying, putting it off, as always. And so now here we are with another deadline. The Freedom Caucus has really kind of stepped in the breach here. And it's a question from, as far as I know, and then I'll let you correct me, of whether all of these, the tax cuts that President Trump began in his first term, will be included in raising the debt ceiling and funding the government, all of that. It's very complex. Okay, now, tell us what's happening, what you think should be happening.
Well, we've got there are two separate things. One is that they're going to have to do a funding bill for the current year because they're on a temporary CR that ends in March, and the Democrats are threatening to shut down the government if Trump doesn't back off his cuts in various agencies, which is not going to work for them because a shutdown hurts them a lot more than it hurts Republicans, since their constituencies depend on government. So I think that you'll see a resolution to that, and maybe we'll even get some cuts in that. But where the big fight is on the next budget resolution, the one for the fiscal 2026, and that's where we're going to see, that's where we have this fight going on between people who want one big, beautiful bill that kind of has the president's whole agenda rolled into one, and people who prefer to have two separate bills where we do, you know, immigration and defense essentially now and wait until the fall or the winter to do tax. And that's the strategy that Lindsey Graham wants. And some of the Freedom Caucus guys agree with him, by the way. But I disagree. I think that's a very dangerous strategy, because the later in the year we go without extending the tax cuts, the more the automatic tax hike that's staring at us at the end of the year starts to have serious economic and political consequences. And if they don't get the Trump tax cuts from 2017 extended, taxpayers are going to see their taxes go up something like $2,000 to $3,000 on average. And businesses are seeing taxes go up as well. And even if they get it done late in the year, let's say they get it done the last week of December or something like that, there's going to be a huge amount of economic damage from the uncertainty in the meantime, and businesses holding back and waiting to see how it's going to be resolved. And that means that the benefits of the tax cut really won't be felt in time for the election next year, which could be a total wipeout for Republicans in that scenario. So I really would prefer that they figure out how to get on the same page and do what President Trump has said he wanted, which is all of his major agenda items, including the tax cuts, on his desk by Memorial Day, so that they can sort of clear the decks and they can all start campaigning on having delivered on those things early, and so that people can feel the benefit of them. As of right now, though, the House cannot get agreement on whether to include the tax cuts in this first bill that moves, which has allowed the Senate to kind of jump and go first, even though, as you pointed out, the House normally goes first, the normal constitutional order of things. But the Senate has now introduced their budget resolution with their reconciliation instruction, which does not include tax provisions, and they're trying to do this idea of, do this bill with no tax now and then come back to tax in the fall, which, as I said, I just think is a very risky way to do it.
Well, you know, according to what I was reading here, of course, and I'm not following this as closely as you are, Phil, but what the Freedom Caucus is recommending, according to Just the News, and The Blaze is actually reporting on this too, is a one big thing that would do reconciliation, emergency border control, even a rise in the debt ceiling to $4 trillion, which is new for them. You know, they've refused to do that, and then also the tax cuts. So I don't know. I mean, who in the House would? What's the rift in the House? I did read just a print of it said something about Johnson wanting to do it in big chunks and not all at once. Is that what's happening?
Well, his budget chairman, Jody Arrington from Texas, is one of the only House members to not sign the Americans for Tax Reform No Tax Pledge, and he actually has been open to tax hikes. And I think that he's the biggest challenge, is that, you know, he buys into this idea that, you know, it's going to be too, quote unquote, expensive for the federal government to extend all the tax cuts, even though really the only way we improve the fiscal outlook for the federal government is to have strong economic growth from the tax cuts and all the deregulation the president is doing, and strong spending cuts. That's really the key. And so I think that there's just, you know, there's some disagreement, and there's almost no majority. I mean, they need to get almost a perfect consensus, I think, to get anything done, and that's very difficult to do. And so, you know, we've got this weird situation now where, you know, it might actually be easier for Trump to get things through the Senate than the House, just based on the math.
Oh, that is weird. Well, that is really a change. All right, I want to do one last thing, Phil, because this, we're talking about the budget and what happens in Congress, and you and I both know that has tremendous effect on everyone listening to us, even if they don't quite comprehend in this moment what that's going to mean to them. But what they do comprehend is prices. And so Elizabeth Warren did a little, if you watched the Super Bowl, it was lovely. Elizabeth Warren had her own message at the Super Bowl, and this is what it was, clip 7.
It's Super Bowl Sunday, and here's a reminder that Donald Trump has done pretty much nothing to lower your grocery costs. Remember, during Donald Trump's campaign, he repeatedly promised to lower food prices immediately. He said on day one. But here we are, way past day one, and the cost of groceries has only gone up. Chicken wings cost over 7% more than they did a year ago. Egg prices have risen 60%, from $2.51 a dozen to over $4 a dozen. Look, instead of lowering costs for your family, Trump's been focused on cutting funding for hot meals for seniors and giving Elon Musk access to the system that makes sure that your grandparents get their Social Security checks on time. Donald Trump needs to buckle down and use the tools he has to lower grocery prices and deliver on his promises.
I think you could drive a truck through some of that, Phil, but I'll let you drive it. What's not true about that?
Well, I like that she's the spokesperson for the Democratic Party, because she's so astonishingly unlikable, and it's just painful to listen to her speak, to be honest. So, I mean, they should keep pushing her forward. The only way to lower inflation is for the federal government to spend less money, because when the federal government spends lots of money we don't have, and it's financed by selling bonds, and the bonds are purchased by the Federal Reserve that's printing money, we saw what happened. We saw what happened through the Biden presidency. And so for her to say he hasn't cut the price of and then, by the way, the examples she gave were poultry products, which have gone up in price because of the bird flu, which has nothing to do with inflation. That's like a specific cause that's identifiable for that. But, then she railed against spending cuts. Says, how dare you use Elon Musk, and they're trying to cut spending. It's like, well, yeah, they're trying to cut spending because if they succeed at cutting spending, that will contain prices. She's undercutting her mess. She's basically saying he hasn't cut prices, and I'm totally opposed to everything he's doing that would reduce prices. This is the, if you add the two parts together.
Yeah. Is there a hope, you think? I know with that, there's so much discussion of tariffs and you know, things. There's so many moving parts. I'm not sure anybody in the world can predict when prices might come down, because it's got to be a convergence of a million different things. And you can say what you want about President Trump, but he's trying to track just about all million of those different things. But is it possible, Phil, if costs are reduced, and can we actually get prices down within a reasonable amount of time, even say a year, with all of the things that he's trying to do, if he succeeds?
You know, it's very hard to get any significant cuts in nominal prices and in what you actually pay in the price tag that's posted. But what we can do, and what I expect to happen if Trump's able to implement his agenda, is we can get incomes growing faster than prices. And so you'll be able to afford more, even with prices absorbing the big increase that they had in the Biden years. And that's really the key. If you can get incomes rising fast again, then that pinch that people feel at the end of the month is lessened substantially. And in some things, you can actually bring the prices down as well. Particularly, I think we may be able to see energy prices decline if a lot of new production comes online from the deregulation that Trump is doing. And maybe we can see, price at the pump come down some. And I'm glad that the tariffs on Canada were delayed. And even you'll notice that when he proposed the tariffs on Canada, he said 25% on everything except crude oil. He said 10%. I would actually exempt crude oil completely, because we want prices at the pump to be as low as possible. But I think that we can definitely see energy prices come down as a lot more production comes online. But the key for most things is We want to get those incomes rising again rapidly. And I think, the deregulation, in Trump's first term, he had a rule for every agency. They had to get rid of two old regulations for every one new one that came
in.
He issued an order this time that said you have to get rid of 10 old regulations for every new one that comes in.
Wow.
And he said that every agency of the federal government has to have a net deregulatory agenda every year under his presidency. And so I think we're going to see tremendous amount of economic lift from the deregulation agenda if they can get the the tax bill done, which is crucial, then we'll have that element in place. And if we can get any kind of spending restraint as well, we'll have all the ingredients to have really robust prosperity with rising real incomes, and that will make it so people can afford to buy a lot more of everything and prevent the prices from rising. So they're sort of all pieces of the puzzle, and if any of the really important ones fail, for instance, if they don't get the tax cuts extended, then we're going to have problems. But I think that if he gets all the major pieces in place, it's going to work very well, as it did in his first term until things were derailed by the lockdowns.
I just thought of one last thing I just have to ask you, Phil. You've been in D.C. for years, ever since I've known you. And you're like, even though you're not part of the swamp, I don't think you're part of the swamp. You are a creature who lives in the swamp. So
yeah, I'm one of the 5% of D.C. voters who voted for Trump, whatever the number is.
There you go. All right, so you're surrounded by people who work for government, and all these agencies have been cut. These offers are being made to have government workers, you know, step aside, take the buyout. What is your thought on that and where that stands?
Well, I think about 60,000 workers have taken the deferred resignation offer, which is on hold by one of these judges that decided that, the federal government, the president can't hire and fire people in his own executive branch, which I find astonishing. I don't know how that's consistent with the Constitution at all, but I'll tell you, I mean, it's the conversation around town. I mean, you overhear it everywhere, people talking about, oh, my God, what's going to happen to my job? Am I actually going to go into the office? Remember, most of these federal workers have not been going into their office since before COVID. So a lot of them are back this week, actually, for the first time in 5 years. And so it's, although another issue is that our completely insane local government and our mayor have made it harder than ever to drive in the city. They got rid of lots of rush hour lanes. They brought in more bike lanes. They put up red light and speed cameras everywhere, and they did no right on red almost in the whole city. And so now you got everyone coming back, and like traffic is even worse than it's ever been. So there are a lot of challenges associated with trying to get couple million people that have just been sitting around at home not doing much to either get serious about doing their jobs or resign. It's a big upheaval. But I look at what Musk did with Twitter when he turned it into X, which is kind of the template for what they're now trying to do with the whole federal government. I think he cut the number of staff by 75%, and the site got better, not worse. The people who stayed were people who were willing to work hard and add features and were serious about it. And, the federal government is obviously much bigger and more complex than one company. But, I think that if we can reduce the number of federal employees and have the ones that are left be the ones that are really committed to working hard and, producing value for taxpayers and showing up, then we're going to get much better quality of government services and save a huge amount of money at the same time.
So there's like 2 million, right, federal workers and 60...
Yeah.
Thousand have taken the buyout. Okay, well, that I think that's very encouraging too. And Phil, so to you and Ferdin, I think you're saying they're not going to be going out to hire 60,000 more people who are on Trump's team or embracing his policies. It's just that they're going to be gone, and we're going to trim things down.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the people who stay are going to be expected to produce a lot more, work a lot more, and it should more than make up for the people who go, and the people who stay who do not sort of step up their intensity and their productivity, they'll be let go. I mean, I think you are going to see significant layoffs of an involuntary nature after this buyout period's over.
Well, that's going to be interesting. All right, Phil, we have to talk again soon. Phil Kirpin, again, president of American Commitment, and knows all things numbers, and you can see why I invited him to join me this morning. So thank you, Phil, for your expertise. We appreciate it very much.
My pleasure, Sandy.
All right, Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN.
plan. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
As abortion continues to rise, Preborn is expanding their life-affirming care in the darkest corners of our nation to help more hurting women and save more babies. If you have the means, would you consider a leadership gift to save babies in a big way? Your tax-deductible donation of $15,000 will place a machine in a needy women's center, saving countless lives for years to come. To donate, go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Donald Trump is smarter than me, you, and all critics. You know why we know? Because he has the White House, the Senate, the House.
Totally agree.
The popular vote. This dude is a phenomenon. He is the most powerful human on earth and in our lifetime. And we're still saying, well, how is this God? We look like idiots to ordinary
people. You're totally right.
You're totally right. That's the voice, if you don't recognize, of Van Jones. Van Jones is famously a communist, a self-described communist. He wears glasses. He's a nice-looking black guy. And he was on with this other liberal guy. I think it was a podcast. And you heard what he said. President Trump is brilliant. He's smarter than me. He's smarter than you. Stop telling me or wondering why he's able to. How can a man like that, who's so, you know, by inference, not very smart, accomplish what he's accomplishing? He says, stop it. He's brilliant. And I just think it's fascinating. And he is brilliant. But I want to emphasize to all of you that I just think it's very clear that this is God working through him. You know, as wonderful as he is, and I do have a lot of respect for him, and I love what he's doing. I'm a cheerleader right now. He could not accomplish this without God's hand in this. Van Jones' heart and mind couldn't be changed. And all of the people that, I don't know if you've noticed, but I've noticed that a lot of people that we know are a significant amount of people who are actually have been kind of hated Trump or not liked him are actually beginning to kind of moderate their position. I don't think Donald Trump, yes, he's done his part on that, but God's the one who changes hearts and minds. And all of these factors just lining up so incredibly. And also just the inspiration that President Trump is experiencing to do all of these things one right after the other is pretty breathtaking. I want to tell you just a few more things that he's done before we say goodbye today. He's actually removed the director of the Office of Government Ethics. That's an official that's tasked with ensuring that government workers comply with conflict of interest and ethics requirements. But this person's been on the job. He was appointed by Biden, and he's no friend to the Trump administration. So he's been removed. And so that's a good thing. I have to tell you, that's a very good thing. He's also established a White House faith office. Now, let me just tell you what they say in their executive order. The White House faith office will empower faith-based entities, community organizations, and houses of worship to better serve families and communities. The office will be housed in the Domestic Policy Council and will consult with experts within the faith community and make recommendations to the president regarding changes to policy, programs, and practices to better align with America's values. President Trump is committed to protecting the liberty and freedom of our religious communities, organizations, and students. And we know that's true. I could talk to you through several of the things he's done, but he's put his money where his mouth is on that issue. And so that's the other thing he's done. And then here's one that's out of the box. I was traveling in, I'm not sure where, some remote place many years ago, And there was a South African gentleman who ended up with us in some given place. Now, I should go back even further. I knew very well the head of Team Missions, that's the Evangelical Alliance mission, Dick Winchell and his wife, Marge. They were just very dear friends, and their kids, all of them, they grew up in South Africa. That was their home base. And so then I have really dear friends that work pioneer missionaries in Zimbabwe, which is a companion sort of African country in the sense that they have the same kind of issues. They've been developed by British and Dutch interests and become a powerhouse in Africa, very productive, mines, diamond mines, huge farms. One of the nation's world's leading producers of breeding bulls. It's pretty interesting stuff. But when apartheid happened, and of course, you know, how you can't say anything against apartheid because we don't want people to be divided by race or one race to be diminished or mistreated or harmed because of their race. That would be, God would not want that. But apartheid became not what we think it is. So fast forward to, you know, other years ago that I was on this trip and I met this South African, and he told us that South Africa is an absolutely miserable place for white people now. Now, I don't know. This is his story. That they live in compounds with, that they have to pay private security even to exist because it's so dangerous for them. They can't get jobs. They are mistreated like blacks in America were mistreated at, you know, in the early parts of our country. And you might say, cheer that on. I don't cheer that on. I don't cheer on what happened in our country, and I don't cheer on what they're doing to African whites. Many of them are Dutch in ancestry. So President Trump has actually signed an executive order to what, how they express it, is to address serious human rights violations occurring in South Africa. And they passed a bill, it's a land confiscation act, to seize disfavored citizens' property without compensation. The government of South Africa blatantly discriminates against ethnic minority descendants of settler groups. And I know they're talking about the Dutch, I'm sure of it. So the Dutch were the lead settlers of that. So President Trump has addressing the human rights violations in South Africa. Nobody does that. They don't have the courage. That's exactly what Eric Holder said, and I was really appalled when he became President Obama's attorney general, and he makes the statement that we are race cowards, a nation of race cowards. I have no idea what he's talking about. I think we fought those pretty good battles. I don't think that we were race cowards during the Civil War. I think people gave their lives on both sides to make their case. But that's what he said. But I think in the issue of what's happening in the world, in major corporations, even in the Super Bowl commercials this past Sunday night, there is this poison in the air that we have to feel one way. And the way is that blacks and brown minorities are mistreated and whites have privilege, and that has to be rectified, so whites must be punished. And, you know, and all good, you know, lots of great history, great music, great art has to be removed, even proper grammar, Shakespeare, because that's all part of white supremacism. Those days have to be gone. And we have to be able to say that South Africa is a racist country. Their leadership is racist. They are punishing white, and I'm feeling, this is my interpretation from what I'm reading here, white Dutchmen. They can't get jobs. Now they're going to confiscate their property. Well, last I looked, that's not right. And I don't think God is so concerned about color. I always say to you, he's concerned with real justice, which is what's right and what's wrong for people of all colors in every situation. And that's the kind of justice that we need to be for. So that's the last thing that I am going to say that President Trump has just done. He's done it in a lot of things. And we'll talk about it. How can I possibly keep up? Because he's doing so much. And I'm personally very grateful. That doesn't mean it's going to be perfect. And I know he's not perfect. But God is perfect. And I see God's hand in a lot of the things that are happening. Well, I'm so grateful that you listened today. And I want to thank our sponsor, Timothy Plan, because you can put your money where your values are when they help you and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit TimothyPlan.com/Sandy. That's TimothyPlan.com/Sandy, or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. And one last thing before I say goodbye to you. Don't forget, you can call us at 662-821-2040. Leave us a message, and we'd love to use it on the air if you say something. We got to say something good. And you got to be, you know, you can be angry, disagree, but don't be, you know, vulgar or, you know, unkind. You can write us at sandy@afr.net, sandy@afr.net. You can go to sandyrios.com to find the podcast, any of the social media platforms, or any podcast platform that you like. You can find the show. I want to thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to today's edition and our second conversation with Phil Kirpin on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.